This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Good morning, crypto.
Be anticipating the next move. We believe the next step going forward will be the tokenization of financial assets. And that means every stock, every bond will have its own, basically, CUSIP. It'll be on one general ledger. Every investor, you and I, will have our own number, our own identification. We could rid ourselves of all issues around illicit activities about bonds and stocks and digital by having a tokenization. But the most important thing, we can customize strategies through tokenization that fits every individual. We would have instantaneous settlement. Think about all the costs of settling bonds and stocks. Mm-hmm. But if you had a tokenization, everything would be immediate because it's just a line item. And so we believe this is a technological transformation for financial assets.
Good morning, warriors. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of your favorite crypto news channel, Good Morning Crypto, where we bring you the most relevant and impactful crypto-related topics from a top crypto research team in the world. And we're kicking it straight to Gonzo before we get into our special guest for today. But Gonzo, I thought that would be a great way to start the show after the breaking news, BlackRock and Hedera, U.S. Treasuries and tokenization. We're going to break it all down. First of all, how are you feeling? And thank you for being here.
I'm feeling good, man. Just getting ready. And later on today, I'll be flying down to Arizona for the conference. Get to be on with Tony. I hadn't seen him in a while since I've been on this kind of my other schedule. But yeah, and last night was cool. We did that Merlin Spaces. Mark Yusko was the guest. I couldn't stay for the whole time, but it seems like we got a lot of people. And he's always good for, information on Bitcoin. So I thought it was really good.
Definitely a really good talk. And we'll bring up some of those same topics for today's show, Tony. But first of all, thank you for joining us this morning. There's plenty of exciting topics we're going to talk about for today. A little bit of Ripple news. We'll talk about the lawsuit and also Ripple using US dollar Tether. But we're starting this show off with Hedera and BlackRock. But first of all, how are you feeling this morning, Tony? And what's on your mind?
I'm feeling great. The bull market is still ripping, guys. I know we've been in a bit of a cool down phase, but get ready for the next leg up. So I'm great. And I'm happy to be here with you guys.
And we appreciate you, Tony, but let's get this thing started right away with the Hedera article, because yesterday we saw Hedera do a 96% gain on the daily candle. And that's not typical unless it's alt season, right, Tony? So we want our listeners to be familiar with this. Have a plan, create your exit strategies, and stick to the plan that you have regardless of the headlines. Let's break down some of the misconceptions from yesterday. So Hedera's HBAR token pumped 96% on the misinterpreted BlackRock announcement. A widely misinterpreted announcement from the HBAR Foundation has sparked confusion among crypto influencers and sent the price of HBAR soaring. Now, we can debate the headline later, Tony, but let's get into some of the details here. A BlackRock money market fund has been tokenized on the Hedera blockchain, sending Hedera token up 96% in the last 24 hours. But the world's largest money manager was only aware of the move on chain, despite many believing that it was involved. The widely misinterpreted HBARX announcement was posted on April 23rd, and it shared that the blockchain trading infrastructure firms Archax and Onera tokenized BlackRock's ICS US Treasury Fund on its network. The video shared the announcement seemed to suggest that Onera, Archax, and BlackRock were partnered on the venture, but HBAR claimed it was bringing the world's largest asset manager on chain. This is where it gets interesting. Onera was believed to be bringing BlackRock bringing their $22.3 billion fund onto the blockchain using Archax and Onera. And these are some of the posts that went viral yesterday. But this is where it gets interesting, and we'll kick it straight to Tony after this. A Cardano Ghost Fund DAO founder initially believed that BlackRock had no involvement with Hedera's development and slammed the foundation on Twitter. He stated what did happen was the HBAR project through a secondary market tokenized shares of a BlackRock fund. Much like I can buy a Rolex and take a picture and post it on my X account, that doesn't mean Rolex partnered with X. But the Archax co-founder also responded, saying it was indeed their company and their choice to build BlackRock's fund on Hedera, but everybody involved was aware. So with that being said, Tony, I think that answers a lot of the questions that people may have about the whole event. BlackRock may not have been in the room and said, is it Hedera? Is it Algorand? Is it XRP? No, they trust a third party to do so, but they were aware of the decision and I'm sure they signed it off. What are some of what's your initial reaction to all this news?
Man, the Hedera marketing team is having a good day today, despite them getting some pushback because, you know, what's the saying? Good news, bad news. It's all good. It's all good, right? If you're getting, you're in get the press, you're getting the mentions, the price of HBAR has been ripping. Look, I think at the end of the day, the fact is there's people tokenizing on the Hedera blockchain. So regardless if BlackRock themselves, Larry Fink came out and said, yes, we're doing this, or as a partner they work with, Archax is tokenizing one of their funds, it's still happening. And that's the important factor. There's still adoption and utility. I think people get thrown off by the framing of it, which I understand, but you know, that's marketing. I think they were certainly trying to capitalize on the mentions, but I'm bullish on Hedera. I'm bullish on HBAR. You look at who's part of that governing council, man. It's incredible.
Spot on, Tony, and I actually had this pulled up behind the scenes. We already got 708 live listeners joining us. Show us some love, smash that like, but I want to let our listeners know that Thursday and Friday of this week, we will be at the Freedom Conference event. I believe we will be live streaming. I'm not entirely sure, but we will not have Good Morning Crypto on Thursday and Friday. And Tony, that is super rare. We almost never miss any of those 5 days, so we are taking it off for the conference in particular, guys. We're not slacking this week, I promise you that much. But Gonzo, on a more serious note, what's your reaction to the Hedera news? And does this signal a much larger sign for the industry? One big player takes a leap, the rest of the market seems to follow.
Yeah, I think it goes into, we've been talking about real world assets being a very strong narrative in this cycle. And you're kind of seeing that right there with tokenization of assets. And what Tony's saying is spot on. When you look at the governance council for Hedera, and like when you see the founder and what the goals are, right, they're going to start leveraging those relationships. And so, it's one of the projects that I have in my portfolio. It seems like it's funny just because it's all, again, narrative driven, emotion driven, right? We understand there's real utility, but it seems like the ISO tokens kind of woke up over this, right? Algorand had a pretty good pump overnight, right? And so all it takes is like one or two projects to have some kind of announcement, and it kind of brings light to that niche. And then everyone starts kind of YOLOing in, right? We always talk about this, like the time to invest in Hedera was when no one was paying attention, nobody cared, when the price was like totally boring, not when it's like peaking out now at like 17, 18, 19 cents. The other important thing is your exit strategy, right? If you were getting into Hedera at the bear market lows and you were up 160, 190% and one of your targets hit, it's important to kind of execute that target because look what happened. It kind of turned back around. It's coming back down and it's going to go back up, but it gives you an idea of where we're going to go. When this thing gets really crazy, you can see the levels that we're going to start reaching and how quickly it happens.
And Tony, we can talk about the price chart for just a moment here, because I think this is a good sign of what takes place during alt season. Many of these projects pump based off narratives. And I've said this for a long time. It's the news of an XRP ETF that will actually prompt the price more than the institutional buyers for the first 12 months. We're seeing it with Bitcoin. It's the same type of deal. There's a ton of volume coming into Bitcoin from these ETFs, but we know the marketing and the news, that's what's driving the sentiment right now. So I just wanted to get some of your thoughts on what we saw from HBAR. This token was trading at 8 cents yesterday morning, reached as high as 17 cents last night. And I think that's a great indicator that when many of these tokens pop off, this is what we can anticipate. What do you take away from this?
Yeah, I think you're spot on, because we are in a bull market. We are in an uptrend, and many of these tokens have bottomed. So what happens is the good news pours gasoline on the fire, right? And they start pumping and they start moving, and then they start breaking resistance and build support levels. So it's a symbiotic relationship. You know, good news doesn't really do anything in a bear market because you're in a downtrend. But when you're in an uptrend and there's a lot of liquidity and a lot of people ready to see which coin's going to pop off next, and then you know, you have the retail crowd, which lags, and they come in when things are pumping versus buying the bottom, it all correlates to higher prices. So it's just gasoline being poured on the fire.
And with the Bitcoin halving happening just last weekend, I'd love to get some quick comments here from you, because we've been showing this data throughout the week, and I want to give our listeners the best chance to profit over these next 12 months. Nobody gets rich in a short period of time. There's a great man called Dan Pena. I'm sure you're familiar with him. He said, even idiots, and I'm quoting him, guys, can get rich in 7 years if they work hard enough. That's the type of mindset that I love. Anybody can get rich, and I wouldn't call anyone an idiot, but I love the idea behind him. Anybody who works hard enough and has a plan can reach their financial goals. And I want to just give our listeners a little insight into what we're seeing with Bitcoin over the next 4 weeks. So of the past three halvings, Bitcoin doesn't deviate very far from its initial price on the date of the halving. 4 weeks after the event in 2012, we're up 9%. 4 weeks after the event in 2016, we are down 10%. And 4 weeks after the event in 2020, we are up 6%. Here's where it gets interesting, Tony. 12 months after the event during the first cycle, we were up nearly 8,800%. Unbelievable. 1 year after the halving in 2016, we were up nearly 300%. And in 2020, we were up nearly 550% just 12 months after the halving. A conservative estimate here, after talking to a lot of people in the industry, is a 2.5x from the price on the date of the halving. Now, I believe off the top of my head, it was about $63,500, $64,000. That brings us to a minimum estimate of $150,000 during this cycle. I'd love to hear some of your thoughts and your reaction to this data. What are some of your projections? And nobody has a crystal ball here. It's just these types of conversations, I think, are helpful and important.
Yeah, I'm personally looking at that range. I was calling for like 135 to 150K. It could go higher because of the ETF speculation and the news that's going to follow it, because we're seeing Hong Kong is launching ETFs come April 30th. London said they're exploring Bitcoin ETFs. So I think there's demand, there's brand awareness, there's penetration into pop culture and society now. And you're seeing these big institutions are doing the marketing. You know, they're doing the lifting now. It's no longer us doing podcasts and videos. You got BlackRock and Fidelity doing commercials, and they're going out and educating the RIAs and wealth managers. So I think certainly we're going to crack six figures. You know, what does the high end look like? Maybe it's a, you know, around that 150K mark. Some people are calling for higher based on Fibonacci models on the charts. But I'm going to start taking profits as soon as Bitcoin crosses six figures. I'm going to ladder out or dollar cost average out, because I don't know. I've been burned in the past by thinking it's going to go higher. And you know, everybody's calling these big price points, but you got to go back to the charts and you got to look at what's happening in the macro too. You know, is the Fed about to cut rates soon? Because that has indicated that markets are going to crash. So we'll see.
There's a lot of things that we got to take into consideration, Tony, but I love what you bring up there. There's been a huge debate. Are we going through another four-year cycle, or is this finally the moment where we see adoption change the structure of the market? I'm in the same category as you. If I was to choose to pick a side, this is another four-year cycle, speculation driven, but I think we're very, very close to utility seriously impacting this market. Gonzo, I want to defer to you for some comments as well, because Tony brought up the $180,000 Fibonacci target. I took that from you, my friend. So credit is given where credit is due. What are some of your thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a guarantee that we're going 180, but like for in the previous cycles, we've at least made it to the 1618, right? Mm-hmm. And that one is at 180. In two other cycles, we went really parabolic and we got close to the 2618, right? In the last cycle, we didn't make it there. We topped out the 1618 and then we rolled over. Look, we're in a super reflexive market. And so what happens is people pay attention, they buy, price goes up. More people pay attention, price goes up even more, right? So it feeds itself. It's like a loop, right? But eventually it's going to top out. And that's why what Tony's saying is so important. You're not going to catch the exact top, just like we don't catch the exact bottom. So it's better to have a plan and scale out and leave some kind of profits on the table, right? Than trying to exactly catch the top. And then the exchanges, you know, they all shut down. And then all of a sudden when that big correction comes in and you know, it's pretty deep, and then you got to wait for the bounce.
Exactly. And that's why we always talk about Merlin. Shout out to Johnny Crypto this morning, guys. And we got 1,251 live listeners joining us. Show us some love. Smash that like button. And if you haven't heard about Tony's book, you're about to hear about it right now. And guys, we're going to get into this topic right afterwards. Ripple's fine and Jeremy Hogan's new analysis. But Tony, many of our listeners may not know that you have officially launched your first book. Congratulations, Thinking Crypto. And I'm just going to give you the open floor. What's the book all about and where can people find the product?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I wanted to write this book to educate new folks coming into the market, but also document the story of crypto. What is crypto's past, present, and future look like? And it's important for us to document the regulatory battles because we're facing that. And we need people to act, to call their representatives, to start making campaign donations in the right place, to vote accordingly, because crypto is a ballot issue. We saw it on Super Tuesday. And I wanted to address the misconception that I run into random people in public or my family and friends, and they are always like, hey, isn't that a scam? Didn't that FTX guy destroy Bitcoin or kill Bitcoin and crypto? That's the perception they have. And I'm not talking about us here who are early adopters. I'm talking about the average Joe and Jane on the street. That is the common misconception they have. And they don't understand Sam Beckman-Fried was just a Bernie Madoff, right? Bernie Madoff appeared in a regulated market and scammed the hell out of people. Same thing happened here, although we are in an unregulated market. So I wanted to clarify and bring the education aspect. There's a difference between the technology and the asset class and a bad actor. And then talk about the regulatory battles, SEC versus Ripple, Grayscale versus the SEC, the Bitcoin ETF race, and also advice for how to look at tokens and when it comes to investing. What are the do's and don'ts?
Sorry about that, Tony. Stuck on the mute button. But let me ask you this. First of all, this is available on Amazon, and I was showing that as people are talking about this. $9.99 for the Kindle, $18 for the paperback. Now, I'm old school. I like the paperback, Tony. I'm not going to lie to you. I may use my iPhone 24/7. When it comes to reading a book, I do like to hold it in my hands, guys. So shout out to Tony. Everyone, go check out the book. I believe you said an audiobook could be available soon as well. It's not out yet, but that could be something that's in the works. So another really exciting development there, Tony. Any final thoughts on the topic?
This is also a great book, you know, to share with a family member or friend who is still a skeptic about crypto, wants to learn. It breaks it down in layman's terms. So, and it gives the holistic view, right? The regulatory, the SBF, what to do, what not to do, what does the future look like? So it's a holistic book.
And that's what I want to talk about too. If you want to get somebody a gift who may not understand crypto, and hopefully my mom's not watching, mom, you're getting a gift right now, but this is what I'm going to be giving to my mom. She reads a lot of books, a lot of paperbacks. And so I'm going to give her this book and I'm guaranteed she'll read it front to back, Tony. Now, here's the request I asked Tony before the show. When I see Tony in person, can I get a signed copy? We don't have a deal yet, guys, but if I can convince him during the show, we're going to get it done. And Tony, I just want to remind people again, the book is called Rethinking Crypto, The Crash of FTX and the Rise of Safer, Stronger Digital Assets. Let's hope Tony's right with that title because we're getting into another very, very emotional topic for some of our listeners. And I'm keeping it lighthearted, so don't take that too serious, Tony. But Ripple contests a $2 billion SEC fine, saying the penalty shouldn't exceed $10 million. I do have a brief clip that we're going to play from our friend Jeremy Hogan here. It's about 90 seconds, but I know Tony has some in-depth thoughts on the topic. So first, what's your initial reaction to the $2 billion fine, and then the reaction to the $10 million response from Ripple?
Well, the SEC continues their unlawful and outlandish activity, right? It's ridiculous at this point. It's shameful. And we see they're getting scolded by the judges and the courts and much more. Lawyers are quitting. So at this point, I'm like, whatever, man. They're not going to get $2 billion, right? But they're going to try to raise the bar as high as possible to get as much money as possible. But I think Ripple's in the driver's seat here. I think the crypto industry is in the driver's seat here. Now, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that was not the case. Everybody was scared. Now everybody's punching back at the bully. The industry is going on the offensive. They're being proactive. They're suing the SEC before they ever got any type of Wells notice or whatever it is. And I'm here for it, man. I think politics plays a big factor in this with Elizabeth Warren and much more. So I love that the industry is fighting back. And I love that Ripple's pushing back. Hey, we're not giving you $2 billion. You may walk away with maybe $50 million or $100 million, but you're not getting $2 billion.
Here's something else, and I'm going to kick it to Gonzo after this follow-up question. The SEC made $4.9 billion from fines in 2023. So this fine alone would be about 40% of their total revenue for the year that they made. I'm hearing that, and we're going to get into it later in the show, $100 million could be the number. The SEC needs a number big enough where they can market this thing as a win. Nobody knows for sure, but what do you think about the $100 million projections we're seeing now?
Yeah, I think that's doable, and I think Ripple would be open to that. But nowhere near the multi-million, hundred millions, or even a billion. So I've been on record since this lawsuit that because in the early days, nobody knew what was going on and how this would all work, that Ripple would have to pay a fine. And I've been saying that probably since 2019 or so, that this could be the case. So I think they pay their fine and they move forward, and the SEC may say this is some sort of win, but it's really not, because XRP is relisted. Secondary market sales are not securities, and it's further exposing how outlandish this lawsuit was. It shouldn't have been brought in the first place. And same thing with Coinbase and all these coins. So I think Ripple's in the driver's seat here.
Gonzo, the important thing to know here about what the SEC is asking for with this fine is they're asking for $876 million to pay back retail, or not retail investors, just investors that were harmed. The irony here is that they're going to take that money and either give it back to institutions or put it as a plaque on the wall. And I see Tony shaking his head, which is just, it goes to show where we are. The state of the market today is really, there's no rules on this road. Any cop can pull you over at any time, and you just got to submit to the search here. This, it is what it is on these streets, Gonzo. But floor is yours in regards to the Ripple news. What are some of your thoughts? And I'll ask Tony a follow-up.
Yeah, you know, I mentioned this yesterday. You know, Meta Lawman did an interview where he pointed this out, where we already have case law that talks about like the punitive stuff when you cause harm, right? And no way in any of that did they show that Ripple caused harm to the institutions, right? The people that got harmed were us, the investors, because of everything that happened. So I think they're going to have a tough time arguing that point, right? And I had said this before, that you're going to see really when they met, how far are they away from that number, if the SEC was really stuck on $2 billion or they had another number in mind, and then what Ripple's number, right, was. Because if they're closer to that, then we get a settlement. If not, it goes to court. But it goes to the, like what Tony was saying, as far as the SEC is negotiating from a point of weakness. After the Grayscale case, after losing mostly what the Ripple case, the Coinbase case, it's going forward, but that's not a big deal. Like, a lot of these cases just end up going forward anyways. They just need somewhat of an argument before the judges let it go over and then let it be decided later. So, and then you see what happened with the news recently with those attorneys being forced to resign because they got in trouble for the DebtBox case, right? I think it's DebtBox or whatever that project was called. So they're really negotiating from a point of weakness, right? Now, that's using some common sense and some logic, but everything that the SEC has done has been totally illogical. So we see how it plays out. But they're definitely coming from a point of a disadvantage. And I think Ripple sees that. So I think Ripple will settle if they get closer to the number that they were thinking. If not, if they're like really far off, then maybe this thing goes to court.
Well, Tony, that's a perfect segue into our next topic here, because the article that we read yesterday, and we won't read through the whole thing again, but indicators are either Coinbase or Ripple is going to the Supreme Court. Now, what we're going to talk about is which is more likely, Coinbase or Ripple. But she said, and this is a former SEC commissioner here, the former chief of the SEC's crypto litigation unit, said that it's probably going to give the SEC comfort to proceed as it has been after the Judge Torres ruling here. And the agency is not going to back off bringing regulatory cases in the crypto space. Now, here's where it gets interesting. She also reinforced the likelihood that one of these lawsuits brought against companies like Ripple and Coinbase are ascending to the Supreme Court to resolve fundamental questions about the definitions of securities within the crypto space. There will be some definitive sort of clarity on those questions. That's disappointing for me to hear, because I Googled this. I did a little bit of research, Tony, and it told me 12 to 24 months timeline extension, bare minimum. If this goes to the Supreme Court, we're looking at 12 months, basically minimum. And what we've seen from this case is that nobody's getting things done quickly, right? There doesn't seem to be any pressure behind the SEC or Ripple to get this thing settled. I think the likelihood is that Ripple does head to the Supreme Court, because even if Ripple is willing to pay a $100 million fine, that is only 5% of what the SEC is asking. I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on the whole matter, and then Ripple versus Coinbase, we'll get into it.
Yeah, quick note before I answer your question. Remember, John Deaton entered as amici on behalf of XRP holders. Remember, there's no fraud in this case, folks. There's no fraud. There's no allegations of fraud. The only reason XRP holders lost money is because of that SEC lawsuit. And thank goodness that John Deaton entered to make that case. Like, hey, you're punishing the XRP holders when there was no fraud and all these things. Once again, this lawsuit was nonsense, right? So that's important. I think that's going to go in favor of Ripple in having to pay fine, because once again, who's complaining that they lost money because of what Ripple did? It was all the SEC. Now, I think this case could certainly go to the Supreme Court. I was talking to Amanda Tuminelli. She's a lawyer at the DeFi Education Fund. We had a great conversation about this. It could be Coinbase as well, but I think more likely it'll be Ripple because you have the token and it all goes back to that, to the token, right? And this case is very much focuses on the token. So this, though, if it were to go to the Supreme Court, is not good for the SEC. It breaks down the narrative that Gary Gensler says, there's clarity. It's all clear. The rules of the road are clear, right? As Elizabeth Warren will say. So if it's going to the Supreme Court and you have these different second circuits and third circuits are not agreeing with each other, clearly the rules are not clear. So that's not good for Gary. And I don't think XRP will be harmed in any way. It's actually good. It's a good narrative that Gary Gensler is on the wrong side of history. And remember, XRP is relisted on all exchanges. So it's in the clear and it won that secondary market ruling.
So if XRP were to go to the Supreme Court, your belief is this, right? We saw it in, my belief is this. I didn't mean to say your belief. But what we saw in 2021 was that even when the SEC sued Ripple in December, alleging that XRP was an unregistered security, the token went from 70 cents to 17 cents. But that from that 17 cent bottom, we did an 11X, reaching $1.90 on some exchanges. My belief from day one has been whether this lawsuit is over or not, XRP will be participating in this bull run. I'd love to hear some of your speculation about that. If this heads to the Supreme Court, is this going to hinder XRP's price further, or is this market driven by liquidity and XRP is still the fifth largest token?
Yeah, I think it will not hinder at all. I think, as mentioned, it will be beneficial because it breaks down Gary Gensler and the SEC's narrative that there's clarity in the market. If it has to go to the Supreme Court, that means there's dispute between the different courts and different people. So the Supreme Court has to rule. And then XRP is relisted. The liquidity is coming in. They're doing a lot of building now on the XRP ledger, Ripple, that is, which they're looking to launch a stablecoin and AMM and all these things. So there's developer activity. So you have all these different factors which are aligning to a move in the price. Now, how high we go, that's a different question. We'll have to do the chart analysis and much more. But I believe XRP will be participating in this bull market for sure.
Gonzo, I'm going to kick it to you for some questions here, but we got 1,835 live listeners joining us. Show us some love, smash that like button, and check out Rethinking Crypto, guys. Tony just published his first book. We got to show him some support and some love. So check it out. Let us know what you think in the live chat as well. But Gonzo, we're talking about a bunch of exciting topics this morning. We haven't even gotten into the Tether discussion. So I'd love for you to just close it out on this XRP to the Supreme Court versus Coinbase. I think he makes a great point where if the XRP / Ripple case heads to the Supreme Court, the debate is around the token. Whereas if Coinbase heads to the Supreme Court, the debate is around secondary security sales and things of that nature. What really sticks out to you about both those cases, and which do you think will head to the Supreme Court if it has to be one of them?
You know, Abs, I'm not an attorney, so I'll let the attorneys that do content like speak on that. But I will say that I think you're 100% right, that regardless of where we're at with the case, the price is going to go up, right? Because I think the market is run by liquidity. And I think it'll have something to do, and I've been saying this for a while, with the Fed cutting rates. That's what we saw in 2019, right? With the Bitcoin pairs finally bottoming out, and I think we still have a little bit more to go, right? That's what we saw on April 8th on that Saturday, right? We saw Bitcoin dominance explode up to 57% and kind of drain liquidity from the altcoins, right? And so I'm not saying they're going back to zero or anything crazy like that, but I think it's just a healthy correction. It's what we do in these cycles. So I see the pairs kind of finally bottoming out this summer. Maybe it coincides with some kind of rate cut or the start of rate cuts, right? I know that the market has started to kind of phase out rate cuts. Like, you know, we originally thought we were going to get a rate cut in June, or we're going to get three, and then now it's in September. And so we'll see how it goes. But I think that once that happens, the ETH Bitcoin pairs bottom out, we get some kind of final flush out on the kind of USD pairs, right? So like Ethereum, USD, Bitcoin, USD, whatever that is. And then once Bitcoin dominance starts to collapse, that's when we get the true alt season that everyone's been chasing for the last, you know, like 3 years.
And Tony, if you're going to be successful in crypto, you have to do two things that are naturally uncomfortable. Buy the red days and sell the green days. That's just talking from personal experience. One of the things that I've realized is that if I'm not comfortable purchasing when the narrative is bad, then I don't fully understand what I'm purchasing. I need to fully understand what I'm getting myself into. And if that from that point forward, I can justify buying lower prices, Great example of this is AVAX. Me and Gonzo talked for a long time. There was a number of AVAX I was trying to accumulate, and I was a little bit frustrated because it went up to $60, and I said, this is so much higher than my DCA. I can't buy $60 AVAX. We got a dip to $29, and I already had the limit orders placed. This is a great example of what Gonzo's saying. These short-term dips always come with negative headlines. It's the game, right? In the same way that a positive price action always corresponds with positive headlines. When Bitcoin breaks 100,000 or 120,000, CNBC is going to be telling, hey, Tony, go and buy some, right? Yeah. Meanwhile, all their friends were buying 12, 14 months ago. So maybe you can elaborate on that, and then we'll get into our next article.
Yeah, great point. And some people have been asking me, hey, are you buying Bitcoin right now? I'm like, no, I bought Bitcoin in December 2020. I bought it in January 2023. That's when I bought. And they're like, oh. And so I explained to them the market cycles, and you got to be a contrarian, not go with the herd. Forget about Jim Cramer. Forget about CNBC. Look at the charts. Where are we at in the market cycle? And then position yourself dollar cost average in. So you have to do that. And I've learned that lesson, man. I learned it the hard way because, you know, my first go around, I think everybody, right? You FOMO. Oh, shit, it's pumping. I got to go grab it. No, that's the wrong time to buy. And are we near the top where, you know, the herd comes in, all the average Joes and Janes who are not paying attention? You don't want to be buying at that point because, unfortunately, they're categorized as dumb money. I didn't make that term up. That's just how in market terminology. You want to be in the sight of smart money, buying those dips, positioning yourselves, and then watching the charts, right? You got to know these levels and take your profits on the way up.
And we have to be accustomed with Bitcoin driving liquidity into this market. There's some frustration within people who are experiencing their first cycle here, Tony. They're saying the altcoin, whatever it is that I'm holding, hasn't had as many gains as a Solana or a Bitcoin. I'll throw Solana in the category because everywhere I go, I seem to hear that name. I'm not a Solana maximalist. I wish I was. I wish I had been buying $9 Solana, but I do have a little bit, but not enough to be celebrating for, right? So I think Solana and Bitcoin fall into that category where comparison is the thief of joy. And if you're holding a lot of these currencies that maybe we're not in an alt season like Gonzo broke down, so we're in these accumulation ranges, that is a good thing. If you understand crypto cycles, you understand the structure of the market, take advantage of good opportunities. Do not chase the headlines when they come. And HBAR is a great example. Let's just spend 30 seconds on this right here. What happened yesterday? News comes in. We absolutely pumped. And we're looking at the daily time frame, but I'll zoom in just to show our listeners. We reached as high as we went from 8 cents to 15 cents on the daily candle. Well, what is this? This is speculative traders entering Hedera, putting in some leverage trades, getting excited about the currency. And there's people who are hearing it and buying the news. They're saying, let me buy some $12 Hedera because now 12 cent Hedera, not $12 yet, because eventually this thing's going to go to $2 and $5. Well, why wasn't that same mindset here? Because they don't understand what they hold. They're just responding to the narratives and headlines being promoted on their feed. So that's what our listeners can avoid by simply understanding what Tony said. Take advantage of the low opportunities, get comfortable selling when you're in profit, and do not get greedy in this market. It's one of the easiest tricks. And I talk about that personal experience all the time here, Tony. But what we should do is we should close this whole discussion out. We're going to go back to the XRP case for just a moment because Jeremy Hogan made the case. Will Ripple pay $100 million in fines? That is still only 5% of what the SEC is asking here. So let's hear Jeremy's discussion and we'll debate it. Here we go.
Quote, taking both discretionary and comparative factors into account, an appropriate civil penalty would be no more than $10 million. That would reflect about, I think I left some, that would reflect about blank because it's redacted, of Ripple's actual gross revenues from pre-complaint institutional sales and would be proportionate in both percentage and dollar amount to comparable digital asset cases where there was no culpable mental state and no substantial risk of harm or risk of harm to others. Well, before Goble, the SEC is requesting $1.95 billion, and Ripple says not only should there be no injunction, it should only have to pay $10 million in total because no one was harmed. They can't prove any harm to the investors or to the purchasers, and also $10 million would be a reasonable penalty based upon past penalties. So I would say that based on what we've seen so far in the case, that the final judgment will come out this summer, I'm guessing July, maybe August, and then whatever the ruling, I think both sides file notices of appeal, and the case heads up to the DCA Appeals Court and is ruled on next year. Now, I wouldn't appeal it if I was the SEC because bad facts make bad law, but that's just me. You know, I don't know if the SEC can just let this go. You know, everything seems very personal to them. And anyway, that's my call. $100 million and an injunction as to the institutional sales. We'll see if I hit the bullseye or if I'm way off target.
Isn't it interesting, Tony, that if the SEC gets $100 million free dollars from this whole ordeal, that's considered not a loss for them. It's very interesting the way that they're even framing this argument here, asking for the $2 billion. It sets the bar so high that even if Ripple only gives them 5% of what they're asking, we're still talking nine digits here. So give me your reaction to Jeremy Hogan's take and we'll move forward.
Yeah, I think he's right. And I think it will be close to that $100 million number. But it's pathetic, you know, that the SEC gets to walk away with this once again in a non-fraud case. If there's a bad actor doing fraud like FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried, I get it. But we know this is just a shakedown. The SEC is acting like the mob. They're going around shaking down companies, Kraken and many others, small NFT projects as well. It's pathetic. And remember, XRP holders took a big loss because of that SEC-driven lawsuit. Will they give some of that $100 million to XRP users? Nah, it's probably going to line Gary Gensler's pockets.
Gonzo, give me some closing remarks on this. What is your reaction? And then we'll get into our next article.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Tony says shakedown because that's exactly what I was thinking, what I said yesterday. And that's what they've been doing, right? Like the SEC for some time now has lost its way. And it's not about protecting investors. It's about shaking down these crypto companies so that they could pad their budget, right? And so, but like I said, the tide is turning and we'll see what happens. That's why what Tony was talking about at the beginning of the show as far as elections is so important. That's why we talked about yesterday, it's so important, John Deaton running, and if he can beat Elizabeth Warren, right? That would be so big. That would be so big for our space because he's such a good guy and he's so educated, right? And then finally we can get somebody in Washington, and there are others. Tony's had some really good people that he's interviewed, but the more people that we can get on our side, and it's not even on our side, it's just stating facts, right? Because when you see people like Elizabeth Warren, and she says dumbass shit that, like, you know, they're using Bitcoin to buy nuclear material to make a nuclear bomb, is the dumbest shit ever. Or you see these committee meetings where even the people that are the witnesses that are like talking, when they were talking about all the stuff that was going on that funded the Hamas attack, where they kept, like, even the people being interviewed kept saying, I don't want to make this about crypto. Like, we're talking about the, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars that come in through the regular financial system that's funding these guys. You guys keep talking about crypto, but she would kept taking it back to crypto. And it's just like a total attack. So it's just being able to kind of state the real facts of what's going on and not being sensational and all the dumb shit that she usually says.
And then, you know, Tony, this argument really hits home because I was born and raised in Boston, Massachusetts, my friend. So when we're talking about John Deaton coming in and changing how things are going, I have friends and family. That's where the majority of my friends and family are. They've noticed the changes that have taken place. So it's a different in place. We're looking for change, and I'm keeping it lighthearted this morning. Vote John Deaton 2024. If you're going to listen to Abs and Good Morning Crypto, we need Elizabeth Warren out, at least according to my calculations here, Tony. But this is a more interesting article in relation to blockchain here, as Robert F. Kennedy wants to put the entire U.S. budget on a blockchain. We can hope, we can dream, Tony, but let's see if this will ever become a reality. Robert F. Kennedy said during this speech, I'm going to put the entire U.S. budget on a blockchain. Every American can look at every budget item in the entire budget anytime they wanted, 24 hours a day. We're going to have 300 million eyeballs on our budget. I love the attitude, Tony, but what's your reaction here to not only Robert kind of starting these conversations, but me and Johnny used to debate, would crypto come up in the 2024 election? Those questions were answered way back when Vivek started talking to Trump about central bank digital currencies, and it started that whole movement. So what's your reaction to Robert Kennedy kind of expanding the conversation here and saying something that the people will love, but the politicians may disagree with?
Oh, I love this idea. I think it will be possible, or it will happen, but probably not for another 60 to 70 years or even 100 years. And here's why. The boomer generation and the people who control the Fed and the Treasury, they have a stronghold on it, right? And you see how they're fighting crypto. You see what they're planning to do with CBDCs and much more. So this is a whole other conversation with the Fed. And you know, you had guys like Ron Paul call for auditing the Fed. But unfortunately, the dirty secret, which, you know, they don't tell you, and which I think a lot of people don't want to know, is that the money printer will keep going because we're in a debt-based system. There's no way stopping this. And because they keep spending more than they actually earn, the government, right? It's a poorly run business, if you want to call it that. They have to keep printing and they have to keep debasing your currency, and inflation will continue to go up. And you're going to lose value unless you know, in your checking and savings account, your spending power, unless you put it in investments like crypto, like stocks, like real estate. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't have that financial education. Now, if you put it on the blockchain, that information, the budget, the government's going to have to get their shit in order, because people, I can't remember when I tweeted about this. I think it was in 2020 when people were writing, and I was like, if people actually knew how much money was being printed right now, because they printed the most money in the history of the United States, they would be storming the Fed. Oftentimes, the economics and the money problem is deflected between the Democrats and Republicans. They blame each other, right? And or they say, oh, this president's doing it. But unfortunately, the presidents and each party don't have control. The Fed sits at the top here. And if people really understood that, they would be really upset about the money system and the Fed.
And I think that's why you're seeing it right now. Let's just call out some names, right? JP Morgan, very anti-crypto. Why? Affects their business. Brian Brooks broke this down. He said, cryptocurrency is a bad name for the industry. Cryptocurrency isn't a threat to our currency. It's a threat to our banking system. And who's sitting here telling us stay away from crypto? Jamie Dimon has decided this is the hill I will die on. And it appears Elizabeth Warren decided to stand right there next to him on that hill. So it's really great to see people like Robert Kennedy. Now, you said 60, 70 years, Tony. Sorry for my... I hope you're incorrect is what I'm trying to say. I hope you're wrong, but I thought you were going to say 6 or 7 years. I'm like, oh, that sounds awesome. 60, 70, maybe my grandkids can experience that. But Gonzo, what do you think? Will there be a day when everything is public and on a blockchain, or is this a great idea and a great concept, but you know, the system, the way it is, will never accept something like this?
I think if they wanted to be fiscally responsible, it'd be a great idea, but I don't think they want to be fiscally responsible. Mm. And because of that, and because of the way that the Fed does things, there's no other way out, right? That's the only trick that they have to control inflation, right? And so we're going to continue to get these cycles. And that's why I kind of lean into where Opal talks about the business cycle, liquidity cycle. You can call it the 4-year Bitcoin cycle. It's all kind of tied together. Right. And it's all about liquidity and the debasement of currency. And it really wasn't until like I started my crypto journey that I really kind of went down that rabbit hole with the Fed. Most people don't understand that, right? Like that when you go to the bank and try to take your money out, they don't have your money. If you try to get a big amount of money out, they have to schedule an appointment and then you have to go in to get it if you want to get cash, right? Otherwise, it takes time because they don't have your money. And when people really start to kind of wrap their head around it, it just totally like blows their mind that like money is just printed out of thin air. Some people that I talk to still think that the money's backed by gold, right? They don't even understand what happened in 1974 because they just don't pay attention. They feel it, right? Everybody feels it. You're living paycheck to paycheck. It doesn't matter if you've gotten raises. It doesn't matter like if you're saving money. They don't understand that it's the debasement of currency that is causing the issue. So it doesn't matter how much money they make. If you stay in fiat, you're losing money. You can't catch up.
Mm-hmm. Tony and our friend Johnny Crypto just joined us, but I do want to just close it out with this thought right here. Gonzo makes the whole debate. People still think our money's backed by gold. I didn't know that. I didn't know anybody still believed that, Gonzo. So that's really interesting to hear. I believe what you're saying, but I think that just goes to show how most people don't actually want to manage their financial assets, Tony. This is one of the things I've realized about 2020 and prior to it. Prior to 2020, people used to be totally okay kind of just making 12 to 20%. 20% was a phenomenal year. I always bring this up. If the trader told you he made 22% in a year, you'd say, what is that guy doing? Let me buy the same things he's buying, right? Now people make 20% in the quarter and they're frustrated because they look at Solana and that did a 340% gain. So everyone's expectations have kind of been thrown out of whack. And I did lose my train of thought a little bit here with where I was going, but maybe you can just close it out with that whole ordeal. Expectations really do set the precedent for what you consider to be a success in this market. And we got to set reasonable expectations even in these crypto bull runs.
Yeah, it's fascinating. There's another layer here with human beings and psychology and over speculation that we're seeing where people, it started with meme stocks. Now it's meme coins. And look, that's it is what it is. So just be careful and do your research. But you know, as we've been talking about, you have to move a lot of your fiat into investments. And that doesn't mean only crypto. Like, I diversify. I have an investment property. I put in stocks as well. Now, the majority is in crypto because, as Paul Tudor Jones said, it's the fastest horse in the race. Nothing is moving like this because it's the first truly global asset class. You know, you can buy a fraction of it. You could be in any part of the world and access it. So I'm bullish on crypto, and I'm moving like some of my crypto profits to other investments. So I say that to help people understand that not all my eggs are in one basket, but I absolutely believe in crypto, and the majority of my funds are there. And whatever's in my checking and savings accounts and 401k, it is what it is, but I'm not banking on that. I'm trying to grow and create wealth.
Tony, I don't know if this is new, but I've realized that for my generation in particular, it's a really important fact for anyone who's, let's just call it under 40 in America. You can't, and I'm going to make a hard statement here, you can't get wealthy without taking some serious speculative risks. Like, yeah. Do the math. Let's say you're a high paid $120,000 employee. If you had zero expenses, it takes you 8.5 years to become a millionaire. Hate to break the news to you, but 90% of people are living paycheck to paycheck or under $5,000 in savings. That is not the economy that we want to exist in. We want to live in a world where I could make enough money so that my wife and my kids can be taken care of and they don't have that financial stress. Seems like the only way we can find that in America and maybe other grade A class one tier economies is by taking some of these big speculative risks. Small businesses, real estate, stocks, crypto. We're a crypto channel. We always talk about crypto, but small businesses they're huge risk, but I can't emphasize this enough. Creating a steady stream of income that you're not relying on someone else for is a kind of a superpower. If you don't have to answer to somebody and you don't have to worry about somebody taking your livelihood from you, you do get a lot more self-confidence. You know what I mean? So I think this whole ordeal and what we've been gifted here with crypto is for anybody who's here. We got 2,415 people here. Thank you for joining us. Special thank you to Tony this morning, of course. But this is our opportunity where in 15 years, the people who invested in the internet, Johnny, are going to be the old money. The new money is going to be the crypto guys. And that's what I really believe when it comes to this whole transition and shift that we're seeing today. The internet of value will be driven by blockchains. And we have an opportunity here. If we just get one investment right, your kids may not have to work in the future. And hopefully they'll do good with that time, Johnny Crypto. But first of all, how are you feeling this morning? Before we get into our next topic, we're going to talk about Ripple and Tether. Thank you for being here. And how are you feeling?
Well, first of all, let me just say good morning to all the crypto maniacs out there. Abs are feeling great. I'm running late. A lot going on, as you know. We have a busy day today as we travel out to Arizona. But I wasn't going to miss our good friend, Tony. I had to stop by to say hello, see how you're doing, buddy. I know you had the book release. Really excited and happy for you. And just wanted to see how you're doing and make sure I spent a little bit of time with you.
Tony, you got to tell you, I got to give you a chance to plug the book one more time. Johnny brought it up. Rethinking Crypto, guys. Find it on Amazon. I love the branding, Tony, but why don't you just tell people, reminder, what's the book and where can they find it?
Sure. So the book explains crypto in layman's terms, explains why there's a difference between the asset class and technology versus bad actors like Sam Bankman-Fried and FTX. And what does the future look like? Tokenization, CBDCs, NFTs, stablecoins, the token economy, and much more. So you can get it on Amazon or barnesandnobles.com. Thank you guys so much.
We appreciate you, Tony. And hopefully when Johnny Crypto launches his book, The History of the Italian Mafia, you'll let him promote it on your channel. I'm just kidding, guys. We really do appreciate you, Tony. And let's get into an article I think many of our listeners are going to be interested in, exciting, maybe not excited about, but they'll definitely be interested in this. Ripple switched their U.S. on-demand liquidity clients from XRP to U.S. dollar Tether following last year's court order. Now, we are going to go through the details of this article, but I think it would be very appropriate to start the conversation with Ripple launching their stablecoin, Tony. Obviously, if they're using Tether, they've been publicly critical of Tether for months, if not years. This is another response we're seeing from Ripple to get their foot in the door with American institutions. What's your reaction to Ripple's stablecoin? And then we'll kind of break down the article about what they're doing with Tether.
Yeah, I love the idea of what Ripple is trying to do here with a stablecoin, especially that they are an established institution working with many different financial institutions globally. It absolutely makes sense. I wish they had done this sooner. And it will work well on the XRP ledger because of the speed and the low fees and such and so forth. And, you know, with ODL, it'll give another option for these institutions that are using ODL to tap into stablecoins if they want to. And the stablecoin market is still young, and we're seeing the battle between USDC, USDT, PayPal's stablecoin. Recently, I think the guys at VanEck, I think, are creating one as well. And the fact that Ripple is using USDT just shows USDT, and there's a lot of FUD, right, around USDT, and it has been for years. And I think some of it was right back in the day. I'm talking 5 years ago. However, today, I think their books are in order. They're working with trusted institutions. They have U.S. treasuries in their reserves. They're doing attestations. And then they got a big endorsement from Howard Lutnick, the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald, which is a Wall Street firm, who went at Davos and said, hey, they have the funds. So I think a lot of the FUD is no longer relevant, and the things that people say. And I've used USDT in the past, and it works fine. I think it was, regardless if you love and hate it, you got to agree, it was an incredible invention and product that was the first of its kind, and it knocked it out of the park, clearly.
And they have a strategic advantage, right, Tony? I want to address one thing before we kick it to Gonzo and Johnny here. Ripple's projecting that the stablecoin market could reach $2.8 trillion by December of 2028. And they stated they want that number one spot. They're coming for Tether. They're coming for USDC. But let's play a hypothetical here and say they come in third place. Let's say the market projects to $2.8 trillion. We'll round it to three. And Ripple's have the third largest stablecoin. And we'll call that a very low number. I promise it would be higher if they were in third. We'll call it a quarter of a trillion. We'll call it $250 billion, right? So we'll say that the top two tokens have over a trillion. Ripple's down there with $250 billion, small number for their stablecoin. What do you think that would mean for the XRP ecosystem, right? We don't have to talk about the XRP price or anything like that. But I think one of the biggest problems with XRP, and we're seeing them addressed through this stablecoin, is you can't program with Solidity, and you also don't have that smart contract capability native on the ledger. So this stablecoin kind of incorporates both of those things while also giving Ripple the ability to pitch a US dollar derivative and not a totally separate asset. And so we don't need to get into the nuances of that, but I've realized through watching a lot of these speeches, that's been a big hurdle for them, not being able to pitch a US dollar derivative, but saying you have to use this XRP cryptocurrency. And yes, it's extremely volatile, but it's a 3 second settlement time. Let's skip the details here and give me some of your thoughts, Tony. If Ripple reaches third place and they're at that $250 billion market cap, what would that mean for the ecosystem as a whole?
I think it would be great. I think super beneficial because I think a lot of people sometimes get this confused that there's many different layers to this cake. So for example, there's Metcalfe's law and network effect. And we saw how Ethereum, as a great example, has benefited from this. ICOs and NFTs and different DeFi applications help the network grow in value and its native token grow in value. So if you're just, there's more building on the XRP ledger and there's more utility, there's stable coins and this and that and AMM, it's going to grow the value of the network, right? And make it stronger, and the native token will go up in value. The other layer, speculation layer, is the general speculation layer, I should say, where the liquidity hits the different altcoins and they pop off. So if you have all of these things in conjunction, it's going to only going to be beneficial for the price of XRP. I know some people are like, oh no, that doesn't mean no one's going to use XRP. Well, remember, there's different nuances to this, right? These tokens help grease the system. So they exist in that way. It doesn't necessarily have to be outright used by an institution, but it helps to make the network function. Same thing with ETH and Ethereum, right? Same thing with HBAR and Hedera. That's why they exist on these public blockchains.
Johnny Crypto, we didn't get your reaction to the news. So while we have Tony here and while we have everyone here, the title of today's episode is BlackRock testing HBAR? We went through the details of this article. And what's really interesting is that the tokenization was done on HBAR through a third party called Archax, A-R-C-H-A-X. Can't pronounce it correctly. You know me, Johnny. But here's the interesting part of this. BlackRock was not only aware, but I believe that they approved it. They're not stating that BlackRock was actually in the room deciding, was it, should we tokenize on HBAR? Should we tokenize on Algorand? But it appeared that they were aware of this transition. And now we're seeing a $22 billion fund begin to be tokenized on top of Hedera. Really exciting news. What was your reaction to what we experienced yesterday, Johnny?
Yeah, to me, it doesn't matter whether BlackRock's aware or not. The point is it's being done, it's being trialed. And the fact that if the technology proves that it can do what it's, you know, what folks are trying to do, and we know the whole world, we know what BlackRock's mission is very clear, right? They want to tokenize anything and everything, even your underwear apps. Everything's going to be tokenized, right? So at the end of the day, as they begin to tokenize this stuff, the question is what technologies are showing that they have the capability to be able to do it? What use cases are functioning? That's the real good news here for HBAR. Not the fact that it's with BlackRock. I mean, don't get me wrong. Anything with BlackRock helps. But to be able to look at it, the buzz is all over the place. Now, what do you think is going to happen? Now, the next guy that wants to do some tokenization trials, which technology do you think they're going to look at first? There you go, right? So for that reason alone, it's very, very exciting for Hedera that people are going to start throwing their name in. You know, a lot of times with tokenization, you might have heard Algo. Sometimes you heard XRP in there. Now you're going to hear a lot of HBAR in there. And so at the end of the day, for me, that's what I'm looking at is, Tony said it earlier, we're in a horse race. We got a bunch of horses out there. I have no clue which horses are going to win. And for me, that's why I tell everybody, diversification is the key in this space. We're in something very, very early. None of us know what's going to win. None of us know. In fact, to be honest with you, some of the biggest players that are going to win in the future might not even be out there today. Might not be out there yet. Google was not the first web browser or search engine out there, right? In fact, it may have been Yahoo. There was iWin. There were so many of these different crazy ones, right? And then at some point in time, Google came and kind of swept the whole world away and ran off with it. And that was way, way, way later. So to me, we're not sure which horses are in there that are going to win this thing, but just make sure you've got your horses lined up in there and be happy if you own HBAR and you see what it's doing. It's getting the excitement, it's getting the attention, and you're just going to continue to see further count. But more importantly, seeing it pick up more and more trials, that is what you want to look for. You want to see if you see more of these things and more. That's a good early indicator that, hey, maybe HBAR is going to be one of the blockchains that leads the race in tokenization. Not only that, not just the blockchain, but look at the companies, right? Like there's going to be companies that are forming and that are going to be leading this. And you got Ondo Finance and CFG, and there's a bunch of other companies. To me, that's where the real money is going to be.
NFT Tone Finance, Johnny. That's an inside joke right there. But guys, here's an interesting thing. And Gonzo, I want to go to you and we'll close it out with Tony here. There was one quote in this article that really caught my attention. And this is, BlackRock's aware that real-world assets are a multi-trillion-dollar opportunity. This is coming from the Kinto co-founder here. Now, why is this so important? Look at this one quote, and this really caught my attention here, Gonzo. Real-world assets are a multi-trillion-dollar opportunity that these big institutions are aware of, and they're aware that blockchain technologies can go from zero to 100 in a single bull market. That's why these times are so important. Johnny emphasizes it all the time. We're still in the speculation phase. We're in the beginning of a utility phase, a 14, 15-year process. And that's what Mark Yusko told us last night, Tony. He said he believes this is year one, January. It's year one of a 15-year integration between crypto and traditional finance. If that's true, congratulations to you, Tony. Congratulations to Johnny. Congratulations to Gonzo. We're going to be some different individuals 4 years from now. Let's put it that way, guys. So Gonzo, give me some serious thoughts. With BlackRock admitting these assets can go from zero to 100 in a single bull market, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you think about like these newer projects that have very small market caps and then all of a sudden they balloon up. It's kind of like what, you know, Solana, Matic, Axie Infinity, it's not RWA, it's a game. But think about like how big it ballooned up. Gala, same thing, right? So when we're talking about real world assets, what Johnny says is a good point. Is you have these trials that are going on, but we don't know who the winner is going to be. You've got like Mantra, right? OM, that is a new layer one that is built specifically for real-world assets because it's in compliance and there's a lot of stuff going on. We'll see how that one does, right? You're going to get all these projects that are RWA related. Now, do your research, right? Be careful because some of them just have RWA, the name in it. And it's almost just like investing in a meme coin. You're going straight on speculation. And other ones actually have real partnerships, real teams. They need to be doxed and then see what they're actually building to see if they have actual staying power. I think a lot of the new RWA projects that come out, for me, I'm holding them for this cycle, right? I'll catch them on the run up and then I'll dollar cost average out because really the test is how they survive the bear market, right? Even the real projects that have real technology that's being used, it depends in the bear market how they manage their money. Do they go to zero, right? They're going to have to create enough runway to make it through the next bear market. And we still haven't seen that. But that's why like a small part of my portfolio is sectioned off for some of these newer projects that are in really strong narratives, that have some good tech, some really strong teams, and we'll see what they do.
Absolutely, guys. And we got 2,700 live listeners here. Special thank you to Tony for joining us this morning. If you enjoyed the show, show us some love. Smash that like button. Quick reminder, we will not be live Thursday or Friday because we're at the Freedom Conference in Arizona. We're not slacking, Tony. We're going to be working extra hard with our friends that week. So shout out to everybody who's going. We're super excited for the event. And to close it out, I just wanted to give you the results of our user poll here. Which digital asset will have the highest percentage gains for the remainder of 2024? 53% of our user poll voted XRPLXLM, 20% said HBAR, 12% Bitcoin, 12% Solana. You don't have to answer the poll, Tony. We just like to get your reaction to the results and remind people about your book and your social medias, please.
Yeah, look, I think we're going to have an epic alt season. I think we already see a preview of what's to come with Bitcoin and how it broke that all-time high before the halving. It never did that in the history of the markets or the crypto market. But because you have these big players here marketing Bitcoin and crypto. I mean, Larry Fink is going on TV promoting crypto for us, right? Who would have thought when he was, you know, back in the day saying it's a avenue for money laundering. But alts are going to see a lot of that liquidity. I like to remind people, please diversify and start taking profits when you are seeing a reasonable return on your investment, because we don't know what the top is going to be. There's no guarantee that it hits the price point you want it to. So I'm speaking from experience, start taking your profits and DCA out. And look, I'm excited. I just want people to make money. I want to make money and I want you guys to make money, right? And we can better our lives financially. So use Merlin as well as a great app to track your DCA out and cash out plan. And the book, once again, on Amazon, Rethinking Crypto. Check it out. It can be a great gift for friends and family who want to learn about crypto. And it documents everything that's been going on. So crypto's past, present, and future.
Thank you so much, Tony. And Johnny, that's a perfect segue. We'll close it out with the smartest way to track your crypto, guys. Tony highlighted it himself. Every year, we go through this parabolic run and we get an opportunity to realize some profits. Be sure to take advantage of it and don't take it for granted. I made that mistake in 2021. I did have profits that were pulled, but I wish I pulled more profit to re-enter the same assets at lower prices. And that's why we talk about it every day, guys. 30 days completely free. Click on the link down below, sign up, 30 days absolutely free. And Johnny made it so that it's one click to cancel your credit card. We're not going to hook you with some AI service, some customer line that's not available. You can cancel anytime during the 30 days. So once again, I want to say thank you to Tony. Johnny, you give me some closing things. I'll close it out with an appropriate thank you for Tony.
I just encourage everybody, don't be an expert at watching your portfolio go all the way up and all the way down. I was an expert at that. That's not something you want to be good at. Make sure you know when to get out. But more importantly, Abs, I'm excited that we got Tony here. Tony, I'm excited for your book. That is freaking fantastic. Guys, make sure you go follow Tony on his website. Go get his book. Hand it to your friends so they can educate them. And don't forget to click on the link below, 30-day free trial also for Merlin, so you can read the book and make sure you got your exit plan set up. It's a win-win, folks.
Tony, it makes perfect sense. You read the book, you figure out how the market works, then you go to Merlin, you create an exit plan so you can make your family a little bit of money during this bull run. And I love what you said just to end the show here. You go, we're here to make money. And that, I feel like people are afraid to say. We always say that. Gonzo's one who says it all the time. We're here to make money, free our families, build communities. We're not here to just realize some 15% gains or complain about 30% losses. We're in it for the long haul. I'll see you in 7 years, Tony. But I want to say thank you so much for joining us today. We always appreciate when you come on the show, and I'm looking forward to more episodes. Tony does have a book signing on April 30th in New York. Am I correct, Tony?
Yeah, April 30th is going to be right across the street from the Wall Street Bull in the Financial District. Check it out.
Perfect, guys. We love you guys. We'll see you in not 73 hours. We're going to see you next week, but we love you. We wish you an amazing day. And like we always say, Warriors, rise. Get your shit together, baby. Thank you for joining.
Let's go.